Okay, right. Testing over with. Are we recording, Adam?
Yeah, I think we're recording. Yep, all looking good.
Okay, I'm in the news section already. Yeah. Right, okay.
Checkbox good.
Who's doing the first article? You or...?
Just... has that always been in the corner of the room, Adam?
I haven't noticed
that before. It's creepy. Not one of the usual shelf toys, is it?
No. Whose doll is that?
Adam's making a thing, a podcast that will really zing, editing will make his brain ping, yes, Adam's making a thing, Jay is making a thing, touching the microphone string, if Cowan was here, she'd make his hand sting, oh, Jay is making a thing, Grumbly is making a thing, I said, you know what I mean, Moomins and Tron gave him a zing, yes, Crumbly's making a thing. Scott is making a thing.
Oh,
he's pissed that he cannot sing. His vocal cords are terrifying. Oh, Scott is making a thing.
Now stop that. It's silly.
Welcome, welcome one and all to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Jay.
I'm Adam.
I'm Asdaman.
And I, yes, I
am a mere puppet.
Thank you.
It's
merely,
a puppet.
Merely Keith. Because I'm on my own tonight.
Oh.
Sausage Fest!
Woohoo!
Yes, no fake Keith, no Crumbly, no Genie.
No Genie. Mm. Genie.
All dead.
Maybe we'll be able to be a bit more professional, or...
Ooh. Remind me to work that into the conversation when we get home.
Professional?
You're a brave man, Keith.
Well, let me look up.
Oh, no. Scott said...
You've got to sing it in that voice.
All right, then. Strange puppet songs beside. It's time for the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo!
Game of Thrones news.
Oh, yep.
The Mad King in London.
Whoa.
Back in the mists of time, George Raymond Richard Martin used to write books about a fantasy realm in a series that is now mostly known as Game of Thrones. Though the TV series that really put the work into the mainstream has been over for more than 7 years...
Good, that long? 2019,
wow. Yeah. Various prequel books and TV series have cropped up in the meantime. Including in that mix is a stage play called The Mad King.
Mad.
The play is set 10 years before the first book and during a tournament where the members of The Mad King, Aerys II Inner Circle, plot against him. The Royal Shakespeare Theatre in Stratford-upon-Avon has been hosting the play since 8th of August until it closed last week at the 5th of September.
Hmm.
But you haven't missed your chance to see it as it's transferring to London. Presumably in the West End sometime in 2027. As of yet, we don't have a venue, dates, cast, or anything else, so keep them peeled.
Yeah, I remember talking about it in the news a year ago, I don't know. Entirely forgot about it.
Yeah.
It's good it's coming back, we have a chance to see it, potentially.
Yeah, okay.
Damn you, sir.
Oh, stolen one of yours.
You've stolen one of my addendums.
Grab it now.
Okay.
Spider Noir. Cancelled.
Boo.
Amazon Prime Video have pulled the plug on Nicolas Cage's Detective Spider-Man spin-off TV series after just one season.
Yeah.
Cage played a down-on-his-luck 1930 Private Dick and former Spider-Man Ben Reilly. The expensive 8-episode series was released in both black and white and vivid colour, and it received very strong reviews and even had 11 Primetime Emmy Award nominations.
Wow.
Despite this success, the reported cost of $400 million alongside falling off viewership will probably explain the cancellation. Nevertheless, both Amazon and Sony are said to be keen on trying a new series based on other Spider-Man franchises,
but if this cannot work, then it makes the venture already feel very similar to Sony's cinematic attempt at a Spider-Man universe. Did anybody at all watch Kraven the Hunter?
No. They made a Kraven the Hunter?
They made a Kraven the Hunter.
Eventually.
Yeah. Well,
they half made it and pushed it out.
I understand the Spider Silk, which is another character, has been shelved.
Yeah, I think that was meant to be even before Noir, as it was called back then.
Yeah,
and it didn't even make it through pre-production.
I like that series, Noir.
I enjoyed it. I thought it sort of captured
the tone of what I was trying to do pretty well.
Yeah.
I went and watched it in a whole black and white thing rather than the colour.
I think there was a review that told you the best way to watch it. So some episodes are best in black and white, while one or two episodes are best in colour.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, I can't remember the layout, but that's what it recommended. So I watched a couple in black and white, and then watched one or two in colour.
Interesting.
That's strange. I would have thought it would have been best to stick with one all the way through.
It may have been, but I did it the way that... I still enjoyed it. Mm. I enjoyed it immensely.
I've not seen it at all yet. I must catch it.
It has the Dunn seal of approval. But there again, fake Keith hasn't seen it either, so...
Okay, maybe we should review it at some point.
Don't want to spoil it for myself, but does it end on an annoying cliffhanger?
No, it's a self-contained story.
That's one good thing then.
So, you're not left dangling on a spider silk. See what I did? Same thing.
Dungeons & Dragons. Ooh. Still hope for a sequel film.
Mm.
Another project that suffered to gain the viewership it deserved was the 2023 film Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. Paramount, who are having existential issues of their own, have passed on a sequel, but D&D owners Hasbro and writers/directors John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein are still keen to make another. Goldstein recently said of this, "I think Hasbro is a big believer in it, and if they can figure out a studio partner to make it work, they'll want to proceed." Of course, finding a partner who would be willing, given the last film lost tens of millions of dollars at the box office, might be tricky.
This is similar to Doctor Who's limbo, isn't it? Yeah. It's getting someone involved to pump money into it.
That was another film I enjoyed. It was a lot of fun. It was silly, and I love the little nod that they put in there to the D&D animated series.
Yeah. Apparently, it wasn't all that long ago. When was it?
23.
Yeah. So apparently it's already gained a cult following. Mm. So it may have missed the target audience when it's released, but word of mouth has since...
It might have just about scraped even. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. With streaming.
Yeah.
Certainly I bought it on, I think it was on 4K, certainly on disc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a hilarious film.
It was really good.
Yeah. They didn't lean on CG too much because they actually used some practical effects for the various creatures and stuff.
I understand. I could be mistaken, but I understand, according to my sources, that they're going to be tackling or looking to tackle the Ravenloft or Ravencroft saga from D&D next.
Don't know that one. Okay. Tim Curry.
Dead.
Timothy James Curry has chewed his last piece of scenery, dropping dead in the billiard room, aged 80. The English actor is probably best known for originating the role of Frankenfurter in 1973's The Rocky Horror Show on London stage and bringing it to the big screen in 1975 for the adaptation known as The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Another notable theatre role was that of King Arthur for the original Chicago, Broadway and then West End runs of Monty Python's Spamalot, a new musical lovingly ripped off from the motion picture Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That's the official long name.
Yeah.
Other film roles include Lord of Darkness in Legend, Wadsworth in Clue, The Concierge in Home Alone 2, Cardinal Richelieu in 1993's The Three Musketeers, and Long John Silver in Muppet Treasure Island. He also voiced a Stephen King-inspired character in Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost, direct-to-video animation. On TV, he appeared on such programmes as Ace of Wands, The Tracy Ullman Show, Roseanne, Earth 2, Lex, Monk, Psych, Terry Pratchett's The Colour of Magic and Criminal Minds. He also had a very notable FMV performance on the game Command & Conquer Red Alert 3.
Yes.
Which, if you've ever played it, you won't forget it.
Going to space.
Talking of forgetting, I'd completely forgotten he was in Lex, wasn't he?
Yeah, does a guest role.
I think he really fit.
I think also there's one couple of roles you've missed out there. Most notably, the titular character of It in the... original TV
they're not
movie.
Mentioning it, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will.
I'm sure. And also, bear with me, I've got to get the name right for this. Okay. It was Rooster Hannigan from Annie, the film version.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But the one I'm trying
can't
to
say,
find.
Have you seen Annie in any form?
Really?
Oh. No. Yeah, he's a dodgy character. He's singing again, but he's a dodgy character in that.
I've only seen Annie in Robot Chicken. It's not quite the same.
Congo, 1995.
Right.
As, I'm going to mangle this, Herkimini Homlicka.
Right.
Congo is a terrible film. It's an absolute. It tries to do Jurassic Park, but with with apes.
Oh, apes. Okay.
Yeah, with gorillas.
I believe it's Herkimer Homonka.
Thank you. That's it. And it is an absolutely terrible film. But the great thing about it is Tim Curry knows it's a terrible film.
Yeah.
And he goes for it with full gusto with a really weird, bizarre Hungarian accent.
Okay.
That sounds very much like him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's frothing at the mouth as he's chewing the scenery.
We shouldn't say too much because we're
going to
guess about him.
Yes. Yep.
More on him later. Hmm.
And, of course, Peter Cullen.
Dead.
Iconic Canadian voice artist Peter Cullen has lost his spark, dying at 85. Cullen is best known for giving voice to Transformer Autobot leader Optimus Prime and depressed stuffed donkey Eeyore, friend of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
He also provided the odd clicking sounds of the alien predator and more voices for cartoons than anyone can imagine. Now, this is a brilliant list, people. Listen up. Including Venga from Dungeons and Dragons, general voices in Spider-Man, Pac-Man, Snorks, Voltron, various Scooby-Doo series, Challenge of the Gobots, predating Transformers, Ghostbusters, The Real Ghostbusters, G.I. Joe, Muppet Babies, DuckTales, woo! Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Tiny Toon Adventures, Pound Puppies, and The Book of Pooh.
And that's Winnie the Pooh,
We're to finish on that one. Okay. Those wishing to hear his Optimus Prime can catch a 40th anniversary apology tour of the Transformers The Movie in cinemas on the 17th of September. This will include a new 12-minute after-credits segment that has Cullen's final performance as Prime.
Oh.
Oh. The question is, did he have enough time left to hand over the Matrix of Leadership?
Yeah, who to, though? I don't know, because he even played Prime in the Michael Bay
he did.
Films.
And all of the Netflix series as well,
really,
the animated Netflix series.
He didn't play him in Transformers 1. That was Chris Hemsworth, wasn't it?
That's right. But I have
a young Prime.
Additional list. Much as that list...
There's even more.
Oh, God, do you hear that might surprise you? The Sonny and Cher Show.
Okay.
Heathcliff the Cat, series predating Garfield.
Yeah.
An obscure one, Mighty Man and Yuck, the ugliest dog in the world. Bruce Banner and the Hulk.
Oh.
Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs. I hadn't heard of that. But interestingly, he was the first Mario in the Donkey Kong cartoon Saturday Super K Show. He also did the series that was a competition to Transformers about the same time called Robotics.
Okay, he seemed to be doing a lot of going across the aisle there.
Yeah, and he did Rescue Rangers as well. Right. So, like, every 80s cartoon
pretty
that we probably
much,
sat
yeah.
through
that,
there.
Yeah.
They tapped him first. If he couldn't do it, they had to go with somebody else.
Oh, him and Frank
it was
Welker.
Probably between him and Frank Welker.
Exactly, yeah. Once he goes, and that's it. That entire generation
will be inconsolable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Frank Welker's obviously Megatron.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. It will be a dark day.
It will be. Yes. As long as he hasn't got the Matrix, we'll be all right.
Oh, any addendums?
I have an addendum.
Whop it out,
then.
I'm trying to find it again. Right. Perfect. As of last Sunday, and this recording would have been yesterday.
Right.
Okay.
There was a small event going for the Writers Guide Foundation in America. And Noel Wiley of the Pitt fame...
guy from ER.
Librarians, played Captain Kirk
okay.
in a table read of Mind Mantrap, which is the first ever Star Trek episode broadcast.
Which, yes, as we recall, tomorrow is the big anniversary. Tomorrow, not that you'd know it from Paramount. Yep.
It was a sold-out event at Highland Park Lodge. You got to watch Noel Wiley channel Captain James T. Kirk, while La Nassan took over as Dr. Leonard McCoy, and Deirdren interpreted Spock in a table reading of Mantrap, which was then followed by... Where are we? Come on.
Punch the Shatner.
No. Was followed by a table reading of Mudd's Passion, which is an animated...
Season. Oh, animated.
Animated Star Trek, with Nathan Fillion filling in as Captain Kirk.
Okay, I can see that here.
While Darcy Carden from The Good Place assumed the role of Spock, and Adam Arkin played the mad creator of the love potion, i.e. Harry Mudd.
Oh, okay. Well, I suppose it's kind of an anniversary celebration. It is, but
you have to be there, though, don't you?
Yeah. You would have had to have been there. I only found out about it when I was sort of scamming yesterday.
Scamming.
Yeah. are they not doing it on YouTube? Are they going to put it out?
I don't know. It was recorded because the article I found had a little bit of footage in there. Okay. So it might appear as a YouTube download.
Hopefully it will appear on the StarTrek.com site
tomorrow
as we record on the 8th.
That would be nice.
I have to say, I've not been impressed with Paramount. They didn't do anything for the 50th Star Trek, apart from a convention, which they could do any time.
Yeah. And I think, was Star Trek Beyond released roundabout then?
Coincidentally happened to come out.
I don't think that was planned, I've got to admit.
Yes, unfortunately, Paramount kind of have other things on their mind at the moment, their big merger.
Yeah, but they should have a dedicated team to Star Trek, shouldn't they?
One of their biggest franchises.
As we've discussed, they seem to be closing it down at the moment.
Well, they have. Yeah. There are no standing sets at all, as far as I understand it.
Nothing being filmed.
And I was thinking, if they were to do something for, say, the 75th anniversary, with Doctor Who, if you want to do a one-off special, what do you do? You don't even need the TARDIS interior, you just have the police box just any old location. But with Star Trek, they'd have to build the bridge, sets.
During the last season of Who, they didn't have the TARDIS interior.
They just blue-petered it, really, didn't they? Just salvaged what they could.
Yeah, so Doctor is a much smaller barrier to entry for a one-off special than Star Trek does.
Yeah. Any more addendums?
No, I'm addendumed out.
All right. And thus endeth the news. As was alluded to in the news, Tim Curry has sadly passed away at the age of 80, and we're going to take a few moments to reflect on his career, various things he was in, and what we remember about him. So, Scott.
Yes. So, my first memory of Tim Curry will probably be him appearing in Home Alone 2.
Oh, right.
Okay. I think because I hadn't seen it, and Muppets Treasure Island hadn't come out, and I was completely unaware of Rocky Horror. Apart from, of course, I was doing the time warp at every kid's party during the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But you didn't know why.
I didn't know why. I just knew the dances. I knew the words. And I was pretty obsessed with that song, so it's a bit of a shame. So, but yes, initially it was, you know, he was hysterical in Home Alone 2, and I loved that film anyway. And
despite the orange fellow.
Despite the orange fellow,
It was Mr. Hector, the concierge. That's it. Yes. In Home Alone 2.
And one of my big memories growing up was that every one of my friends, because we all had those huge video collections back in the day, didn't they? And if you were struggling to find something to watch, it was always the IT TV show, but it comes with a warning, it's about 3 or 4 hours long.
Yeah.
So I was aware that everyone else was aware of this clown in IT.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can't remember sitting through it at the time, but I did rewatch it today.
Oh, really? Okay.
Funnily enough. So I probably seen the odd clip. He's very subtle, isn't he, yes. Tim Curry? He plays it very subtle, and then he dives into a more horrific character.
Yeah, he flips on a dime.
Yeah, because of the length of it, and, you know, he's there for the scare factor. You don't get enough of him, I feel.
No.
Yeah. But it was really good. It's better than I thought it'd be for a TV series. There was lots of blood. It obviously couldn't go as deep as it went into the book. Yeah. But I was surprised about how many other actors I recognised from it. So you had early Seth Green doing Buffy and Scott Eadwin and Austin Powers. Yeah, and I think it was Jonathan Brandis that did that Sequest.
Oh, yes.
The young boy in Sequest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah, who you mean.
And with one the plastic of the dolphin.
I can't remember, but one of the adults is John Boy from the Waltons.
That's it. But, yeah, I really enjoyed that. And then I finished that off with Muppets Treasure Island. Which,
a classic.
Once you've had pork, you can never go back.
Yeah. That didn't make the final edit.
It didn't. But shortly after watching it, I then watched a couple of Tim Curry interviews in his later life, and he quoted that. Yeah. And I'd never heard that quote before. But, I always assumed I'd seen all the Muppet films, but it looks like this one came out so early that I hadn't seen Treasure Island. So it's my first time. It was 96.
I watched it a few years ago.
It's after Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol, yeah. So I'd definitely seen that in later years. I don't know what order I saw these things
in. One thing I do love about that, concerning Christmas Carol and Muppet Treasure Island, I've read it somewhere that Michael Caine treated all the Muppets around him as his fellow actors, where Tim Curry treated himself as a Muppet.
I think after watching both it and the Muppet Treasure Island, I think I got much more Tim Curry satisfaction from the Muppets.
Yeah.
Because he was playing it subtly, but you could tell straight away from his name, as you know, that he was going to turn and just occasionally look at the camera, or he'd lower his voice to sound a bit more evil.
Yeah.
He also got to have a musical number.
Lift me up, boys. Yeah. It's my only number.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. And also, he was a lot of fun in the first half of the film, because he was just the chef, was he, the cook.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really like that. It might be my favourite Muppet film now, just for Tim there.
For me, it's got to be Clue.
Oh, yeah.
Clue is the definitive Tim Curry film for me.
Like I think I've said on many occasions, if I had a chance to pick a doctor or an actor to play the doctor, I would have picked Wadsworth, Tim Curry's Wadsworth, as a typical doctor. He's there for exposition. Yeah. He's serious, but also completely maniacal with it.
Oh, particularly at the end, they're doing the sum up.
Yeah.
Killed it. He's running around mad.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. It's like his impersonations of the other characters. Yeah, and
boundless manic energy, which I think is atypical for a doctor.
Yeah. And apparently the on-set doctor took his blood pressure and said, you've got to calm down, you're going to give yourself a heart attack. He's going so hard.
Yeah.
But he's also a British actor, so he would have been perfect, wouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not sure they would have been able to afford him, but he would have been perfect to my mind.
I feel like his name was put in the hat at one time or another for 96, maybe. I don't know.
Possibly. I'll have to have a go back and look at the movie book, see whether his name's listed in there.
They might have put his name in as an idea and never actually really approached him. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oddly, he was born in Cheshire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Think of him as such a Hollywood star, despite he started off on the British stage with things like Rocky Horror.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Late 60s, early 70s.
He really hit the mainstream.
Talking with my mum about this earlier today, and she said that she remembers seeing him doing Pirates of Penzance Theatre Royal on Drury Lane back in the 82, I think it was.
Another celebrated role I've heard about,
Well, he also did Mozart with Ian McKellar. He played Mozart. I think Ian McKellar played, Silas? His opponent?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Don't know.
But apparently the Mozart was another one where you had to be there. None of it's recorded, but you had to be there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one thing I do love, certainly with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but I have recently found a set of reactors who react. And there's one particular, I can't remember her name. She is a voice coach, a professional artiste, and she has never seen Rocky Horror. And she does it professionally. She keeps going backwards and forwards, explaining what he's doing.
I've probably seen her.
But for the first couple of minutes, it is when he first appears in the lift, walks down and throws off the cloak.
Yeah.
It being gobsmacked does not describe the reaction on her face. It's as if someone slapped her.
Because really, that's another thing, isn't it? He was really sort of culturally influential, because even my mum and her mates used to dressed like Frankenfurter to all those Rocky Horrors at the Hall.
That film has given awakenings to lots of people.
He did it so convincingly from what I've seen as well. A lot of emotion in that as well.
Yeah, and some of the songs, his pronunciation. Yeah. Very, very British articulate. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because he obviously originated that particular...
Yeah.
The first
stage. I mean, there's been other very good Rockies, but
they've all taken inspiration from him.
Yeah, his is the definitive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must say, for me, he actually flew under my radar for a good part, really. And when I look back over his career, there's a lot of things in there that's like, oh, really? He did that? I didn't really notice that. And there's a couple of films I do recognize his name from, things like Legend.
Yeah.
And I actually managed to get to... This is a completely aside thing. Hmm. I managed to get to see the forest set of Legend Pinewood.
Wow. It's certainly really impressive. I didn't know.
It was really impressive in there. I mean, this was sadly about 10, 15 days before the end of filming. They had a big fire at the studio and it burnt down. And it was in the, it was in that they built up this massive indoor set. Mm. Really impressive. I mean, they had like animals and stuff were in the studio as well. It was built in the was the Pinewood Studios Avatar Broccoli 007 stage. This is a massive stage.
It was the biggest in Europe.
It was the biggest in Europe. Yeah, it was an impressive thing to see.
Looks incredible on film. Was that a real place they redressed?
It was a real set.
But what I like about the darkness from Legend is that's again his own voice. It wasn't synthesized or wasn't altered. He just pitched it that low.
Yeah
It goes, sort of shows the range of the guy.
He did a lot of voice work.
Just looking through the amount of things that he voice acted there, I mean, there's a lot of things that I remember. Backing Captain Planet, if you remember the Blight computer in there. He was in the Gargoyles Goliath Chronicles as Dr. Anton Savarius.
Clone Wars, of course, he played.
He took over from the guy who did the Emperor because they lost him a couple of years towards the end, and he took over for the last part of that.
I know he didn't get the role, but he's also, there's a few YouTube videos of him out there doing the original animated Joker. Went to Mark Hamill, but he did. They do a. There's a couple. There's at least one out there where they do a side to side comparison.
Yeah, because it's a lot like looking at Peter Cullen's stuff here, isn't it? You've got like the Rugrats movie, Beauty and the Beast, Scooby Doo,
Wild Thornberrys.
Curious George, Garfield.
Like Curious George.
Sesame Street. There's the list goes on and on. Yeah. I was completely unaware he'd done all this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would also like to do a shout out for Cardinal Richelieu from the 93 Musketeers.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I think with that, he is on a par with Alan Rickman's Sheriff of Nottingham.
Both men could really chew the scenery.
There is that restrained mania that every now and again just peeks out.
Yeah.
He did Jumanji and Freakazoid back in the 90s as well.
Yeah. Oh, he did a Freakazoid, did he? I love Freakazoid. Even in live action, you could tell from the way he used his voice that he would be great in animation. Because he almost played it a bit over the top with his voice, as if he were trying to sell an animation, even in live action.
Yeah, everything was up to 11.
What about Terry Pratchett? He did The Colour of Magic, didn't he?
He played the villain in Colour of Magic, That was the TV.
Was that Sky TV? I remember that coming. I was really excited that they were finally doing Pratchett movies.
He did a great job. The
trouble with the Sky TV ones is they were amazing adverts for the book.
Yeah.
With amazing trailers for the book, you know.
That's right.
It's hard to get that into a
live
action.
Jason in them as
well?
He was
in the first two.
First two, that's right. Yeah.
First three.
Three was it?
Is where he played Rincewind in the first two, and then he played Albert, Death's assistant, in the third one.
That's right. They suddenly swapped his character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, was that Going Postal was the third one?
No, that was the fourth one. The Hogfather.
Oh,
Postal was the first one. Fourth one.
Fourth one, right. Yeah. Real shame. Obviously, he'd been ill. In more recent years, he had a bad stroke.
But he was
paralysed on one side.
Yeah, but he was he was still acting, still doing bits after the stroke.
I think we're just lucky we got him for so long after the stroke, because 2012, what is that, 14 years ago?
Yeah, he still had a lot of energy for life and
he was doing
to perform.
Interviews the whole time as well. They're all on YouTube. They're really interesting as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, curtain closes.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a career.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, well, if you have any thoughts or recollections you'd like to share on Tim Curry, then please write to us at
show@staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo! Okay, well, a bunch of us went up on the annual pilgrimage up to Derby.
Yeah.
Derby. Mm-hmm. To see Whoville 17.
Woohoo. So another great day. Who do we have? I mean, the headlines were Sophie Aldred and Janet Fielding, probably. Mm-hmm. As ever.
And then we had the usual suspects like Jason Hayellery. Pete Mattai was there as well.
Yes, and that apparently been causing a bit
Marquez.
Of interest on some of the news sites.
Mm-hmm.
Phil from Who's He podcast, who was there with us, did a little thing talking about Whoville, how Pete Mattai said a few or several production companies had approached him asking if he'd be interested to help them pitch for Doctor Who.
Ooh.
And apparently this is a thing.
Ooh.
I don't know why. Something, he definitely said that. So it's good to hear.
It's
counter to what Mark Gatiss was saying a couple of weeks ago about Doctor Who's not going to come back for many years. There's a lot of people interested in actually making it happen. But anyway, that's not...
Any road up.
Yeah. We actually started, I think, with the Cybermen.
The Cyberforce, yes.
Yeah.
Which was David Banks.
Yep. Mark Hardy and Brian Orrell.
So you had the Cyber Leader and at least two Cyber Lieutenants.
Yeah, two as Lieutenants, which I think they did both appear to... Didn't they? In,
I think, if I remember rightly, Earthshock was one.
Mm-hmm.
Then what was it?
Attack?
Attack was the
Silver
other.
Silver Nemesis.
And then they both appeared in Silver Nemesis.
And Five Doctors, I'm not quite sure. There's so many Cybermen in that.
Yeah.
Quite short ones.
But both actors certainly appeared in Silver Nemesis together.
Yeah, so they did all eventually work together.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
But was it excellent?
Well, I know I've heard the stories before, but the fact that certainly during Earthshock, they got screwed into their helmets.
And
one particular actor, unnamed actor, freaked out.
Yeah.
Well, and there was another, was it Silver Nemesis, where one got a bit of wire through the ear and they couldn't get him out?
I don't know.
I'm not going to say you're wrong. I haven't heard that one.
I think that might have been on the Silver Nemesis special edition video with the documentary.
Ouch. Yeah. I did see that Gene went up to David Banks afterwards.
Yes.
Because they used to know each other
back
in the day.
Well,
30 odd years ago.
But the cyber book that he did, Gene has an acknowledgement.
She does. She gets
I think he tapped her for research and discuss various bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And yes, it was been a good 20, 30 years, but he recognised her.
Oh,
good.
And remembered her.
I didn't see the outcome that
way. I have the book and the audio book of the book, read by David Banks.
I've got the book. I've got the book somewhere.
And we mentioned Gene there, and we should do a brief little mini Gene watch. I mean, Gene's doing pretty well.
She accompanied us.
Came up with you guys at Derby.
Yeah.
Good to see her there.
She was pottering around and we looked after her, and she eventually got fed up with Karen because she kept on telling her to take it easy.
And did extremely well in the raffle.
The Whoverville raffle.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you won this time.
They learned from last time.
Yeah. Karen got one thing in the raffle.
Cam got Matt.
Yeah, she got us a plush Matt Smith.
Yep.
And yeah, Jean got about, was it three or four things?
I think she did.
Yeah, wow. I mean, there were a few people who seemed to be going up there quite a lot, and Jean was.
Well, that
Jean was one of the frequent thing, and it was commented by I think it was Steve that commented.
Yeah,
saying that we were being horrible by making her go up to get the raffle prize.
But she was the one that won.
She was the one who won. It was
and she was also on the end seat.
Yes.
Yeah. Karen frowning the whole time. Who else was there?
We had Leslie Dunlop. I missed this one.
Aww. Yes.
Didn't we see Leslie Dunlop?
Sat in on the Leslie Dunlop one. Yeah, I mean, she was, she did a couple of things. She was Susie Q in Happiness Patrol, and I forget her name, in
Frontiers.
Frontiers. Yeah. She was talking about that, and it was good to.
It was interesting. This is the first time I've seen her.
Okay.
This is the first time I've seen her at any event.
Yeah, I still haven't seen her. I missed it.
Yeah, and she was a last minute addition because David Troughton had to pull out.
Oh, I heard that.
I seem to remember her doing, was it May to December?
Yeah, I mean, she discussed her, wasn't just who, they discussed her whole career, which was a large stint in Emmerdale.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Yeah, very large stint in
Emmerdale. Very large stint. It was about 17 years, she said.
Something like that,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Fraser Hines, he was in it for a year,
wasn't
he?
So it was a large stint in Emmerdale, and they also briefly touched upon May to December.
Oh, it's always more interesting when they go through their whole career.
Oh, yeah. I found her interesting, but I also found her slightly quiet. I had to strain to
hear as it. Ever you saw them coming in, the AV people, and doing their mic checks, but they get really close to the mic when they're doing the checks, and then the guests are sat way back
right
in the chairs.
So no disrespect, I mean, I don't know whether she's used to this type of thing, this circuit, really.
Probably not,
because like I said, this is the first time I've seen her, period.
Then we had somebody called Sophie Aldred. What does she do?
Never heard of her.
Not a lot.
Great as ever.
Beat anyone up with a bat?
No, she didn't come in somersaulting this time.
No, not this time.
The Dalek props were trembling as she went past, I'm sure.
Yeah. They were downstairs, not on the same floor.
Yeah, they're not allowed to be in the same room anymore,
are they? Not anymore, no.
Well, I think we should also mention that sort of halfway through the day, a bike troop turned up.
Yeah.
There was about 200?
Well, easily 200, maybe more.
Suddenly
we'd all sort of gone out, at least sort of Keith, Jean, Karen, and myself, we'd gone out to get some lunch. There were a couple of Daleks out there, and suddenly a whole bunch of bikers pulled into the square in front of the quad.
what had happened, I think, because they went past, and then someone who happens to be a Doctor Who fan noticed the Daleks, so he turned around and come back, and because he's come back, the entire troop.
I think that they were actually planning to stop there anyway.
Well, they were planning to stop round there, but not directly in front of.
Given how many bikes there were, I mean, they filled that square.
Oh, yeah. Quite easily. There was a few photographs taken, so...
Yeah. I could hear it in the auditorium.
And even smell it.
They were loud.
Not electric yet. Then we had Pete Matthias mentioned, who obviously wrote a good part of The War Between. Nobody's brave enough to ask him when will it appear on Disney Plus.
I don't think he knows.
No, I don't suppose he does. But he did mention that there are production companies interested in making Doctor Who happen. So we'll see if he's involved in that or not. Obviously, he's a potential frontrunner as a new showrunner.
Doesn't surprise me.
Maybe.
See what happens. Watch this space.
Then we heard the behind the scenes of the Blu-ray box set.
I missed that one. Yeah, we were out at lunch for that
one. You missed that. Okay. Yeah, it's good. They gave a few hints as to what's happening. They were talking about they are obviously going to bring the next colour two left colour box sets out.
They're running out of colour ones now.
Yeah, I think there are two left.
There's two left now,
And they said how there's 10 years worth left of Doctor Who, so presumably they're going to be looking at doing it annually from now on. I don't know.
Mum wonders what they'll do. I mean, will they do...
They've got one black and white series out already.
Yeah. I'm just wondering because I know the black and whites don't usually sell as well.
No.
So I wonder if they're going to be doing something like Daleks in colour or War Games in colour. Artificially colour them.
And now the Hooniverse has vanished up his own backside, apparently. Yeah. I don't quite know what's going to happen, but you would think that the BBC would want to try to do a colourisation each year, which would help fill out as the space is out a bit further apart, but I don't know.
Well.
Then we had the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. We had Brian Hodgson, Peter
Howell. Oh, God,
Howell,
yes. Yeah.
Little Paddy Kingsland.
Yeah. Oh, wow, all in one room. That's a good selection. Yeah. Covers all the eras, doesn't it?
It does. A couple of them were quite deaf. They're pretty old.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I can't remember,
audio.
I can't remember the name of the guy who was at the end.
Brian Hodgson.
Brian Hodgson. Who was distinctly deaf, so they put him the furthest away from the person asking the question.
He was leaning forward with his hand against his ear trying to hear the interviewer.
But the small task I loved about that is at some point in time he got in contact, or he was contacted, because he created the TARDIS takeoff effect, the TARDIS sound
the
effect.
The keys up the piano strings.
And there were some various legal wranglements, and it was decided that it was an electronic arrangement. Mm-hmm. So it gets copyrighted as an electronic arrangement.
Not a sound effect.
Yeah. No. And then a couple of years later, the same people got in contact with him and said, right, we're going to be using your sound effect, so you're going to get a couple of coins. No, I think it's an electronic arrangement. Oh, hang on.
When the New Who came back and
it's definitely a sound effect. Well, your people told me that it was an electrical arrangement. Ah.
Key thing.
We'll get back to you.
The legal people told them that.
Yes. We'll get back to you.
I think he wouldn't get any royalties for sound effects.
Yeah, I think he will get royalties, but it would be proportionally.
Juice, maybe.
Yeah, it will be a couple of pence rather than.
So it wasn't a huge amount. And he said the back money is about £2,500.
Yeah, no, but
nothing. It's not nothing, but
it's not nothing.
For several years worth of. Income is not so much.
It's not nothing, but it's more than a couple of pence.
Yeah.
Helps with the pension.
Did come in handy, apparently.
Yeah. And I missed a bit of this one, too. Behind the scenes on Series 2, it says here, Alex Moore, the locations guy.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right. Yeah, yes. I missed a good amount of this
He was sort of more discussing the process and the ability, what the job actually entails and how far it sort of progressed.
Is this the shooty Season 2?
I think this is the shooty Season 2, yes.
And he was saying how he got into TV because of Doctor Who Confidential.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, wow, okay.
It is that next generation coming up.
Again, at the moment, we're roughly where Russell T was, who was a fan of the show and eventually ended up working on it. We're beginning to get back into that. He was a fan of the Mark II show.
Yeah, which was over 20 years ago now.
Which is over 20 years. Horrifyingly so.
It is, yes.
So if they're 10 years old or whatever, they're 30
It's
or
old enough to drink in the US now. And then at the end, we had Janet Fielding.
Janet Fielding.
Yeah.
And eventually, Sophie.
Yes.
And Sophie joined her, Bit of a bumper length one, I think.
It was
the 45 minutes for Janet, and then they tacked on like another 15 or 20 for the both of them at the end.
Yeah. As ever, a great event.
Our thanks goes out to Steve Hatcham and the crew.
Yep. And they are doing it again.
Yes, that was the concern that this was going to be the last one, but at the end, Steve said that there's going to be
an 18.
A Whoville 18 the same weekend next year.
Yeah, so the 4th of September, that would be, I suppose.
Yes, first weekend, that's first Saturday in September.
Yeah. This one, as has been fairly common in recent years, sold out before the event started, so look out for when the tickets go on sale. Yep. I will certainly buy one.
Hopefully we'll remember to and put it in the addendums that these tickets are on sale for next.
Yeah, we should. I know we never think of it.
Yeah. They clearly don't need any help.
They don't. No. They don't, but it'd be good to get a few people that we know along.
Okay.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we've been listening to stuff this time.
Ooh.
We have been listening
on
to...
the toilet.
No, I haven't.
Do you think maybe before we review this, we should say hello to someone?
What,
would seem appropriate.
The puppet-like head over there.
Yes. Well, yes.
He was mentioned in passing, at least in this particular story that's upcoming, so I think we probably should.
And he sort of went to Hooverville as well, didn't he?
Head to Pursby, certainly did.
In fact, he did even get a photo with a disembodied Cyberman head.
Yeah.
Definitely earned a quick hello then.
Okay.
Right, so a big hello to...
Hello, Head of Pertwee!
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
Terrence.
Inky,
Dinky, and Rinky McSquirt's lot.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Moomin. Freaky Cat.
The goats.
The goats who've now thrown Clara off the chair and she's now folded up and leaning against the bookcase.
In a gutter.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
She's used to that.
Yeah.
Sandy the Stormtrooper.
Yakko, Wacko, and Dot. And
Gigawatt. Was yep.
Gigawatt. Yes. Gigawatt sounds better, doesn't it?
It should be Gigawatt, shouldn't it? The Transformer.
Anyway, moving rapidly on before
yes, okay.
We've been listening to Doctor Who.
Yes. Pause for music.
Scorchies.
The Scorchies. Mm. Yes.
Companion Chronicle.
Aye.
Katie Manning.
Katie Manning as Joe Grant, the Doctor, and the Brigadier.
Yes. Indeed.
Melvin Hayes, was it?
Yes. Melvin Hayes. That came as a bit of a shock.
Yes. Everybody else.
Yeah.
The Scorchies, basically.
The Scorchies.
Yeah. So, yes, Joe is trapped in Saturday morning television show, yes. a puppet show.
Yeah. Taking inspiration from various things. There's a bit of rainbow going on there.
Yeah.
A bit of bagpuss occasionally.
Yeah. And play school.
Yeah.
And a bit of Blue General Peter. Muppets.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Muppets.
Yes.
I hadn't heard this one before.
No, this one, it's got quite a few interesting songs on it.
Yes. I chose it especially since we'll be covering
so
puppets.
So it's your fault.
Indeed.
Yeah, we were meant to be doing something else with puppets this episode, but unfortunately Tim Curry died, so that's why we, so we preempted it.
We sort of linked it with the Muppets, so it worked quite well.
It still works.
Yeah. That kind of works.
Tim Curry's definitely a Muppet. So.
as said.
Yeah. The songs in this are basically earworms, aren't they? Once they're in there, you know, you're doing your housework.
We listened to this on the way back from Hooverville, and to a certain point, the car is bouncing along.
Did Gene and Karen enjoy it?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, isn't it? I mean, it's horrific, sadistic in places. Bit like
poor ugly doll Hamble.
I know.
Well, Hamble,
and it's
doll.
Very clever how you suddenly realise that the Doctor is in one of the puppets.
Yes.
Talking.
Yeah,
possessing them. Yeah,
built a little thing so he can psychically influence a couple of the puppets.
Yeah, baffled.
Baffling how he could do that.
Yeah. And I do like the fact that they're mentioning the Brigadier being outside, basically getting ready to either blow stuff up as usual.
As he does. I'd like to do a shout out for Katie Manning. Mm. Although she can't perfectly recreate John Pertwee's voice or Nicholas Courtney's voice, she has a good attempt, and it's a passable, you know, you get the flavour of who they're meant to be.
And it's cleverly written, so it is Joe doing it. Yes. It's not Katie Manning doing it. It's Joe.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with the Companion Chronicle series in general, isn't it? They sort of get a bit like Benny and her diary entries. They're recounting everything.
Yeah, I'd actually listen to this one way back. I think I got this one soon after it came out when I was still actively listening to Big Finish regularly. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of Companion Chronicles that were done in this style where, the sort of companion is basically retelling the story.
It's slightly distracting, but my favourite one is still the first ever Jago and Lightfoot.
Mahogany Murderers. Yeah. Amazing.
The Scorchies come back in Jago and Lightfoot.
They do appear in Jago and Lightfoot.
There's also a couple of knick-knack shout-outs in this, because when Joe pulls out the crystal, did anyone think, oh, it's Metabolis again? And it wasn't. But then there's that line where he goes, it just looks like a load of corks and some screws balancing on a bottle. And you can just see them in Time Monster, can't you?
And also, there's a shout out to Death Comes to Time.
Is there?
When they're first describing the Scorchies' home planet, where they came from. A long time ago, in an island in the clouds.
Death
Comes to Time starts with that description.
Okay, we know a song about that, don't we?
No, that's the ventilation ducting.
But it's a lot of fun with them piecing the story together and then interspersing it with songs. And then tweaking the songs in the second episode to explain the next part of the story as well.
And also the song is involved in the plot progression.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, we've killed him dead.
I love Killed Him Dead. Just the detail they go into, flailing and everything.
And the fact the Master wouldn't do it, the Daleks couldn't do it.
And is it one of the only cliffhangers where the singing, that the musical number, is the lead into the cliffhanger?
Yeah,
I think so. Because I know in Doctor and the Pirates, Sixie goes to sing, and that's when the sting comes in. But this,
are singing, and then it goes into.
But yeah, with this one, they talk about how they've killed him dead, and that's the end.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, oh my god, okay, happy and horrific.
Well, it's a cliffhanger.
James Goss was the writer of this one.
That's right. He's very good writer. Big Finish.
Was the Scorchies the same actor? Was it still Maven Hells from?
I think they recast, didn't they?
Yeah, because it sounded different. Because the setup is different for the Jago and Lightfoot, so it could be another branch of the Scorchies.
I know the name Melvin Haynes a lot with Big Finish, but I can't pull out any other roles he's done.
Eight Half Mark Man, and he did a couple of Drop the Dead Donkeys.
Okay.
I think he would have been very good voicing the Third Doctor, actually, because Mr. Baffle, he did have the quality.
But again, I don't know what his audio work is like, but I'm amazed of the range of the various puppets.
I just feel he's done so many different roles.
Yeah, because I think the mice were Joe.
The three little mice, they were somewhere between Finger Bob and the Clangers, weren't they?
Yeah. We listened to a little bit of the interviews and the making of, and you have the untreated singing voice in there. And one of them is definitely Katie Manning.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. I actually didn't get to the last 30 seconds of re-listening it.
Yeah, they did electronically alter the voices for the mice, but she sang a couple of the lines.
And it's the perfect audio for Joe to lead, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
For Katie Manning. Yeah. I mean, you need that kind of insanity in your act.
The bubbly freneticism.
Another one where you can see her running around the booth, clawing at things, doing the acting.
Making the ray gun.
Yes. Because she's making a thing.
Jodie is making a thing. It goes ding and ping and wing. Oh dear, that tune is far too stuck in my head.
Quite a few of them, actually. Got Comeback of the Scorchies.
Yeah.
Encore of the Scorchies. That, I think, is Jago and Lightfoot. Yes.
So they appear a final time.
So at least three.
So there's a trilogy. I'm
going to have to look for the last one.
Yeah. So this one comes first, isn't it? And then it's Jago, and then another one.
Not quite sure the order of them. Yeah, and also, obviously, time.
Yeah.
Right. Jago and Lightfoot is clearly set before 1970s or 80s unit era. But I don't know,
So, are you happy I recommended this one?
I am happy you recommended
it. It was a very fun one.
Against my better judgment, I am happy.
Any time that you're going to have Adam's car bouncing up and down and going down the M1 is probably
It's a good job there was no police around, you know. The way So yes, I would heartily recommend this one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like, on principle, the talking books, but this one is enhanced talking books.
The Companion Chronicles aren't really talking books like that.
As you said, the way they do it is actually the characters rather than an actor.
And it's in that style of Bernice Summerfield's diary. They're always talking about previous events and then leading into current events. They're all very good.
It's still £8 or £7.99 on the Big Finish website. It's still relatively expensive, particularly for a download.
Clearly, they know
this is a popular one. They keep the price,
keep the price up.
When they first released it, I bought the physical disc straight away. That sounds like my cup of tea. Because you think you're going to get something like Angel and the Puppet, but they've handled it completely differently, haven't they?
It's gone from completely.
It's quite lively. And it's nice and short, but you still get a cliffhanger.
It's a two-parter. Okay. If you've listened to The Scorchies,
and if you haven't, why not? It's amazing.
Please tell us what you think by write, email, pigeon, or tie it to a little balloon and post.
Rock through the window.
Rock through the window. That'll do. At show
at
staggering
stories
dot
net.
Woohoo.
Right, so we have a little bit of audio, not feedback as such, but a little Tim Curry discussion from Michael from Tin Dog Podcast.
So it's from tin about Tim.
Yeah.
Hello, Staggering Stories people. This is the third time I've tried to record this because I just got very distracted.
We are recording.
Why? Well, because I'm easily distracted. That's a good point, actually. So, when I was at Hooverville this weekend, I had a quick chat with you, and it was lovely. This huge chat throughout the entire day. It was great to see Gene looking so well. It was great to see everybody, right? You said to me, hey, before we go, can you record something about Tim Curry for the Tim Curry special that we're recording on Monday, which is today?
Indeed.
So I went, of course I will, and then promptly forgot, and then went home. So here we go. It's now Monday lunchtime. And I thought I'd just record a very quick message to you, just telling you some stuff about Tim Curry.
But three times.
First off, he will be hugely missed.
Right.
Him, yeah. Dolly Parton, and the guy from, you know, Dick Turpin, all in the same week. It's been a brilliant week for, you know, Dead. But let's face it, we all knew Tim from the original Rocky Horror Picture Show run. And let's face it, they'd all been in Rocky Horror forever when they finally got around to making the film.
Yeah, a couple of years, certainly.
But, you know, you just can't tell that they were particularly bored. It was of its time, and it was largely ignored, truly, at the time.
Really? Yeah.
But then it became a cult, magical thing. There's one story I like to tell about my mate Andy, who's no longer with us. And we were around his house, and we'd all been drinking, and he'd nipped off for a nap. And then burst into the room, still very, very drunk, about 4 o'clock in the morning, going, Rocky Horror Picture Show, I love this. And it was 10 minutes from the end. But you know what? None of us kicked off. We just rewound it and started it again.
Good.
Because that's how good Tim was.
Yeah.
So yeah, Frankenfurter is going to dominate everything.
Yeah.
But my favourite
bit cosplay.
Is, well, I think it's him in Muppet's Treasure Island. Because he's just so damn good, but he's so damn Tim. He is one of the last of the great British character actors.
Yeah. Maybe.
Clue, superb.
Yeah.
But you know what? Yeah. I made the mistake a few minutes ago. And this is why I had to record it again, of opening up the IMDb database and seeing what else he'd been in.
Oh, God.
Okay. And the answer is absolutely everything except Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
He's done voices for Star Wars, Hunt for Red October.
Yeah.
You know what? You could watch stuff and you would go, oh, yeah, he was in, oh, my God, he was in that. But obviously, everyone in the world's going to be going, oh, yeah, it.
Yeah.
Have you seen on the internet some people are tying balloons to storm drains?
Yeah,
they are. Tribute. And I think deeply he would have actually liked that one. But he did so much, shed loads of stuff, where he's just doing voiceovers. Yes, he's in Roseanne. Yes, he's in, you know, Home Alone 2. And you go, what? Hey? And then you're watching him and you go, oh yeah, that's fine. But he's doing just everything. He's doing games. He's doing it. He never, ever stops working.
No.
Yes, at one point he ends up, you know, having that stroke. And all that does is turn him to the funniest man on, well, X or whatever you want to call it. I'm scrolling through and I'm seeing stuff that I didn't even think he'd done. Lex? Yeah, well, let's at least said soon as mended on that one. Duckman? So many voices. And what was it? Was it the Thornberrys? I know we were all too old to watch it, but he was in the third Addams Family film as Gomez.
Yeah.
And that's one of those films that you always saw in the video shop and always picked up and then put down again and you never actually got around to watching. This guy will be missed because I just think he was great. Right, I'm going to let you go now and get on with the rest of your night. So until next time, which will be Hooverville next time, or indeed whenever I get to speak to you all again, be seeing you.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, great to see you on Saturday.
There's a line, I think it was Christopher Lee said, I have done loads of bad films. I have never been bad in them.
Yeah.
Which I think you can apply to Tim Curry. He has done some bad films, but he's always been the shining light in nearly all of them.
Yeah. I'm not sure you should say it about yourself, but yeah, I'd happily say it about him. No actual feedback this time.
Okay.
But if you want to send feedback, you know the address.
You know what to do. You know who to do it to.
Yeah.
Just listen to the bit we did earlier.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, dear listeners, this will bring us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
But never fear, next time there'll be more of the same.
Aww.
More fun, frivolity, and jollity.
So he says.
More news and reviews, more who, old and new.
Oh.
So until that,
it's either going to be Tim, T, or C.
Okay, C.
Catastrophe.
Calamitous.
Curmudgingly.
Cleflopod.
Indeed.
We should have gone with tea, shouldn't we?
Should have gone with tea.
Comes.
Crashing.
Cringingly.
Towards us. This is me, Jay, saying cheerio.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sometimes it is better to light a flamethrower than curse the darkness.
So true. All I relate to that.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, Episode 506, featuring Adam J. Purcell as the man, Jay Duran, and the real Keith Dunn. Views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement has been intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Let us test.
Oh, he's recording, we're not recording.
Oh,
we've got to record first.
That would be easier to edit.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at doing hand things.
Who were misses?
Well, I read on the toilet.
What? Under Thomas Crapper. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Am I wiggling?
You're wiggling a bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is my wiggle going up and down?
It is.
That is good. I prefer an up and down wiggle.
The rest of us do not. Please cease and desist. Frantic
wiggling, please.
Wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle.
Wiggly wee.
I think, first of all, we need a moment of silence.
We do, you're right.
Okay.
3, 2, 1...
I do like hands not here, so you've got nobody distracted, and your face slowly goes blue.
We're thinking of her. We're visualising her.
Yes, Count. No, yes, Scott is. I'll do it right in a minute. Yes, stick it down a boa.
That was very good. How's your voice? At one point, I was going to hang on a minute. Is that you, Katie Manning, under there?
But it was slowly coming to me on the trip back.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm sorry to hear it. Wonderful. He was plotting in the car.
Yeah.
Well, your mouth.
Great smell.
Bit of both.
And now I've pulled a pen out of my ass. First it was the ruler.
Oh, okay.
What else I've got up
Tim
here?
Currier.
I'm looking at you, Scott. I am looking at you. Is that...
Follow the pen. Follow the warm pen.
Is that a thing you made?
Yeah. Scott is making a thing.
Scott is hiding his pen. Reese has probably just looked at his watch and gone, oh,
but
crap.
Yes.
maybe he'll listen to Scorchies. Go, what did I just listen to?
Let's start the feedback with some feedback.
Ooh, like that, you mean?
Yes, indeed.
Got it in then.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so 506?
Yes.
506.
All right. Okay, I've got it written down.
You've got these things written down.
Oh, I've got
see, I'm professional.
I'm prepared this time not to screw it up.
Yes. Yeah. Whatever.
I had it written down earlier and I still screwed it up.
Not net.
Woohoo!
See, not a screw up.
Oh, so professional, so professional. Our proudest moment. Right.